Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And recently returning from clubbing a Mugatu, Andy Chan.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, welcome back, Andy. We had such great reviews from all our fans last week that we figured it'd be great to have you come back on the show once again, 2 weeks in a row.
Wow, anytime you guys want to be over here.
Thanks for making the commute twice.
Oh, yeah.
He's a nice guy. Hey, I teased this last week, but the topic this week is the current state of Star Trek. Cam, is this a familiar topic, one we may have done before?
We're recycling material already.
Yes.
Yeah, we did the current state of Star Trek sometime last year, but it kind of dawned on me a while ago when I was desperate for show ideas to pitch to Tyler, because he comes up with so many, and I'm like, you know, when can we do a Traveler episode? When can we do a Crystalline Entity episode?
Don't forget your Worst Hairdos episode.
Worst Hairdos, of course. But I realized it would be a good idea to do sort of the current state of Trek maybe as an annual thing. So this is sort of our summit for 2016, where we'll talk about the state of the franchise. Do we feel it's in a good place? Are we optimistic going forward? Or are we bitter and angry and just want to cry?
Well, I remember last year's episode was kind of depressing, was it
not?
Yeah,
it was.
Like, we had figured out that the prospects of a new Star Trek series, I think the earliest it would happen, either 2018 or 2020. We really did not expect to see another series on the air for another 5 years at the very least.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of that episode was just us coming up with like shows we'd like to see, because we had nothing.
And they had nothing to do with Star Trek.
Yeah. Like a Mama's Family reunion.
Yes. Okay. No, but there's other, like, depressing things going on. It didn't seem as if we'd even get a third Star Trek movie from the J.J. Abrams universe, because there was so much tension going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, Robert Orci, he was trying to direct, or they didn't like his script. It just didn't seem likely they were going to get that one off the ground either.
Right.
It wasn't looking pretty, and we're coming up to the 50th anniversary, and there wasn't much to celebrate.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Cam, let's flash forward a year, and I'm curious. We've got Andy back on the show once again, 2 weeks in a row. I'm so happy. Andy, are you excited about the 50th anniversary of Star Trek coming up this September?
I'm very excited, actually.
How have you been celebrating? I'm curious.
By clubbing Mugatu.
Ah.
Well, the first thing that I did was I went to the Ultimate Voyage show
last
month. I really enjoyed it.
A lot of fans are going to that. Like, what was maybe the highlight for you from that show?
The highlight for me was hearing the James Horner Star Trek II kind of end credits.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite Star Trek soundtracks. Love that music.
Good one, yeah. My highlight was, it just was a big coincidence, but during the Amok Time score that was playing, that's when that infamous fight broke out in the middle of the show. I kid. But no, seriously, for those listeners that may have missed our recap of the Ultimate Voyage, there was literally a fight at the Vancouver show that broke out. Some hippie had, like, blood all over his face and everything. It was...
Yeah.
Weird. We don't know why.
Strange, yeah.
Anyway, so you're excited about the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Do you think the rest of the world is?
Actually, I do.
Okay,
I do.
Cool.
Because my experience, starting with Star Trek 2009, is that a lot of my kind of non-Star Trek friends are actually getting excited about going to see the movies.
Really?
And
They know there's a new one coming out?
I don't even know. I don't know if they know that there's a new
did
one.
Did you know that there's a new one coming out?
Yes, I did know. And it's not being directed by J.J. Abrams. It's going to be directed by
Justin Lin.
That Fast and the Furious guy.
Yeah.
But...
Rob Marshall?
No. Rob Marshall?
I have never seen a Fast and the Furious movie. Fast and the Furious.
Oh, really?
No, oh, really?
And you're friends with Benjamin Yong.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And actually, we are car friends. That's how we met.
Oh, really?
So why have you never seen a Fast and Furious movie then?
I just roll my eyes every time I watch a trailer or something.
So this fascinates me then. Like, what is a car movie that would kind of capture your attention?
The
remake of The Italian Job.
Huh? It's not bad.
Ronin. I don't know if you count that as a car movie.
I do.
You count that as a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
car. I was going to say Herbie Fully Loaded.
The Blues Brothers. That's one of the good ones.
But I'm trying to think of joke car movies that I can
I think
test.
I already hit it with Herbie.
Yeah, Herbie. I can't talk that.
Herbie the Love Bug.
Yeah. So, okay, so, you know.
Other than Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, what's your favorite car movie?
Back it a little late.
Other than Triple X with Vin Diesel's GTO. Bueller. Anyway. No, okay, so it's interesting that you bring up that, you know, your non-Star Trek fans are, you know, excited that this is the 50th anniversary. I'm not really hearing much from my non-Star Trek fans. I mean, just kind of that mainstream penetration about people's knowledge of this. I don't know if it's quite there yet. But, Cam, what's been your experience at this point?
I feel like people are aware that Star Trek is kind of has a higher profile now. And I think, actually, that has less to do with the 50th anniversary and more to do with the death of Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
Which really kind of caught the mainstream really by surprise. Like, we're kind of going through the Prince memoriam period right now, where it's suddenly like a lot of people are really talking about Prince a lot. That was a lot of that was going on with Nimoy.
Yeah.
Where it was like people who I know in my life aren't Star Trek fans were really talking about Leonard Nimoy a lot.
He's just, well, okay, the character is incredibly iconic, but yes, it made me appreciate Nimoy more, like what a charismatic figure he was on screen.
Yes.
He just had, and it's interesting to see him, because I, both his depiction of the character in TOS and in the films, very different, but mm-hmm. like there's still some continuity there, you know, and there's almost this fatherly warmth that you right. get in the films that wasn't there in the original series, which is interesting.
Plus, I mean, the J.J. Abrams movies were so big that general audiences saw Nimoy in them.
Well, let's kind of recap, or let's go over what we have to look forward to right now in this year. Of course, it was announced a few months ago that we're going to get a new Star Trek series that debuts in, supposedly at this point, January 2017.
Right.
So we've got that to look forward to. We have Star Trek Beyond coming up in a few months. It premieres in July.
Yeah.
We also have a lot of fan films that are getting canceled.
Yeah.
So we don't have those to look forward to.
Right.
Beyond that, no pun intended, I think the state of the franchise is probably the healthiest it's been since 2009, I would say, when we first got, you know, word that the J.J. Abrams series was coming around the corner.
I mean, the con circuit is definitely getting is bigger this year.
Well, explain, like, why, or explain to listeners, like, how you know that.
Well, it's just, I mean, from the big Vegas con, which we go to, it was like, sold out. And quite a while ago, which is abnormal.
It is. Yes. It's very bizarre that it's completely sold out.
Yes.
You know.
So, you know, those kind of events are definitely having higher traffic this year, but also a lot of local theater, you know, maybe local theaters in New York putting a Star Trek revivals. We've seen Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 4 lately.
Yeah.
And I know
Ultimate Voyage as well.
Yeah. Our local theater chain is going to be doing something called the Star Trek Experience or something. At some point this year...
What is that about?
We don't know. They vaguely hyped it before we saw Wrath of Khan. They said, 2016, the Star Trek Experience on the screen, and that was all it said.
Very confused. Wasn't it saying something like fall 2016 as well?
I think so, yeah. So it could be they're going to play some of the movies?
Yeah, Andy, you were there with us.
I was there.
Yeah, we're all very, very confused about what that even meant.
But something's coming.
Sure. According to, like, the teenager who's in charge of the graphics at the theater, apparently.
Right.
I don't know.
But there is definitely more of an attempt to get Star Trek sort of out there for fans to kind of, you know, drop their money on.
Okay.
I think also we're kind of seeing a revival in science fiction in general over the last couple of years.
I think especially when it comes to these blockbuster films and just the budgets that they're...
Like Interstellar, Gravity, Moon, and not...
Well, the interesting thing is sci-fi has always had a better success record getting mainstream audiences in to go see like an hour and a half to 2.5 hour long movie. A bit of a spottier record when it comes to convincing mainstream audiences to watch week to week on TV.
Lost in Space.
That was back in 1961, sir. Like, seriously, what's been the biggest breakout sci-fi TV series in the last, let's say, 10 years?
Battlestar?
Yeah, I'd say it's Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
There's nothing else
I mean, you could argue X-Files sometimes touches on sci-fi ideas, but
I call X-Files sci-fi, but the thing is, like, we got the revival series earlier this year, and it got you know, great ratings and very much mainstream show. But I would say because it didn't debut,
right?
You know what I'm saying. But I don't know. It's tough for mainstream audiences. But now we've got a new series coming up in the next year. Obviously, CBS is banking on this, getting a lot of people into their CBS All Access service. So I think there's potential, you know, for Star Trek to be bigger than it's been, I would say, since the 90s. Because at this point, when was the last time we had a series on air at the same time a movie was coming out? That goes back to, what, 2002?
Yeah.
And Nemesis didn't do so well.
What are you talking about?
Enterprise wasn't exactly, like, smashing, you know, both the ratings records as well as getting a lot of critical acclaim in its first season.
Kind of limped to 4 years.
Yeah, so it's really go back to the mid-90s. I think that's when Star Trek was at its last peak, when you had, like...
96?
No, I would say 94, because that...
You don't think with First Contact?
I think First Contact was the mainstream peak.
No, okay, it had... Okay, there's more... like, it made more at the box office than Generations.
Yeah.
But you're coming off Next Generation, which was a mainstream TV series. Voyager and Deep Space Nine, that was more of the niche audience. Any TV network would be happy to get those Voyager and DS9 ratings nowadays.
Right.
But it was still very much a niche audience. You also have Patrick Stewart and William Shatner on the cover of Time magazine in 1994. You're debuting a new movie. You've got another series about to come out. You have Deep Space Nine on the air already. You just wrapped up 7 seasons of TNG. I think 94 was the peak of Star Trek, just period. I'm not necessarily talking just box office, but just like when it was at its most relevance when it comes to pop culture. That's just that's my opinion, of course. But you guys think it's a couple years later with First Contact?
For me, just as a non-fan in that period in time, it was kind of easy to not really pay attention to Generations for me. It was not easy to not know what was going on with First Contact.
Okay.
First Contact was everywhere for me. Like, I just remember hearing about it everywhere at school. No one was talking about Generations.
Okay.
And I think First Contact has a much more mainstream kind of story. It's got the Borg, and it's got pew-pew shooting and, you know, ships blowing up.
Well, we do have a great bridge sequence in Generations that was just packed with action. Either way, mid-90s, I think that was when Star Trek was last at its mainstream peak.
Right.
The thing is, these latest films, the last two that have come out, they're the highest grossing Star Trek movies of all time. Mainstream audiences are going to watch these. I think CBS is counting on that a lot. They're going to market this very, very hard when they debut the new series. I really think that we're in store for just Star Trek in the mainstream in a way that we really haven't seen maybe ever before, frankly.
No, I agree. And actually, Andy, I'm curious just on your take on the new series. Is it something, like, how do you feel about, first off, it being on the CBS All Access and where, you know, you have to pay $6 a week to, or $6 a month to see it, as opposed to being on regular cable? And then second of all, just the idea of a new Star Trek series, is there an audience for it?
Well, about being on Access, I don't think I've ever had a cable subscription. So
right.
I'm kind of that generation where, you know, I'd watch TV when I lived at home.
Wait, you still have bunny ears on your
Actually, no, I did. I've had bunny ears more recently than I've had cable because when I discovered that you can actually get digital signals over the air for free, and it's actually better quality than the cable because cable is compressed. So
that's true.
That's the last time I watched broadcast TV.
Right.
And then now, I don't think I've watched anything, you know, other than live sports. It's been like Netflix or all like other streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I think people of our age consume or watch TV.
Well, here's the thing. Like, let's assume that CBS All Access, I mean, we're not going to get it in Canada. So it's either going to be one of the other Canadian streaming providers. It won't be Netflix up here. Maybe Show Me or Crave. I forget what... I think it's Crave that's acquiring all the Star Trek rights at this point.
I think that's what our former guest Carmen Cartunuto said.
Yeah. So let's say it's airing on Crave. I think that's $5 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to pay $5 a month? And be honest, you know, you're not trying to impress any Star Trek fans here, because a lot of Star Trek fans are
griping about
it. They're saying, I will never pay for Star Trek. But I'm curious, would you be willing to pay $5 a month for new Star Trek?
I would be willing to pay $5 a month. Oh, would I? I don't know. But
see, you hesitate. That's interesting to me.
What but about the fact that you get the whole library too?
No, I don't like the idea of, this is kind of like outside of Star Trek, but I don't like the idea of the service provider also being the same, having content rights as well. I think there's got to be it's anti-competitive to have someone who's controlling the pipes also controlling the content, because then they restrict the ability for other content providers to have equal access to their network.
It's so a pain in the butt, is what you're saying. Okay.
Anyways, those are more of like philosophical reasons, but
hey, that's what Star Trek is all about, though. Philosophy.
As for having access to the entire library, I mean, you know, I think it's not something that I need constant access to. Like, if I want to watch it, it's something that I want to watch, like, when I have the urge to watch it, and it's not something that what I need to have in my collection.
Maybe you'll have more urges to watch it if you're paying $5.
It'll be tough. I think what would do it is people around you, everybody around you has to be talking about it, and it has to be some sort of contemporaneous kind of drive, like live sports or like, you know, Game of Thrones.
Something with buzz, a genuine built-in audience.
You have to be able to participate in those conversations. You have to be able to watch it at the same time.
I think it might be tough, because I think it's going to take a little while for Star Trek, or at least CBS All Access, or these other respective services to gain steam and get people talking about it.
Yes, I agree. And I don't think, it's not really a mainstream show. Even, I don't think even Game of Thrones didn't really pick up until after the first season.
Yeah, that's true.
So after the first season, then that's when all the buzz started, you know, getting built, and then that's when people started watching it, and then going back and watching the first season.
So yeah, I'm also curious, when we're thinking about all these new anthology series that are premiering, I can't think of one that is on these pay subscription streaming services like a Hulu or an Amazon or a Netflix. They're on premium cable services like FX or HBO or Showtime. So that's
right.
Kind of a different model, and I think Star Trek, it's interesting to see that they're the first to jump on this particular model. I still think that they're going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
The business model only makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear fans, you know, have this hesitancy about paying for new Star Trek, it makes me wonder, though. I have no problem. It's $5. It's like I pay more for sushi once a week than I would for, you know, 4 episodes of Star Trek a month. It's right. Not a problem for me.
I think part of it is when you're getting sushi, or when we're paying, like, you know, $12 to go see Wrath of Khan in the theater again, we know what we're getting.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot of hesitation over this, like, new Star Trek series. Like, is it going to be good, or is it going to be another Voyager?
Well, what if all you hear, not necessarily from your friends, but from critics, is that it's an extraordinary show, you have to watch it? Are the critics going to be enough to convince you to tune in, or do you even pay attention?
I still need to see a few shows myself.
Well, okay, here's the thing. It's going to debut on CBS, the actual network, before it goes to CBS All Access, so you'll get to watch.
But they're not gonna be reaching people of our demographic or my demographic, right? Those are the TV, the cable TV people.
The cable cutters.
Yeah.
Well, no. CBS is a broadcast network, so at least down in the United States, mainstream American audiences that are still watching broadcast television, I'm assuming it's going to be maybe a 2-hour premiere. They'll get to watch, you know, the first 2 hours of the new Star Trek series. And if they so desire, they can tune in to CBS All Access and pay that fee. I don't know. I think there is potential here, but I understand hesitation.
How is that going to work outside of... What's their strategy outside of the U.S. then?
Well, they've already been selling licenses. Les Moonves, president of CBS, he says that licensing so far and this was a few months ago, has covered either 60% of the series budget at this point. And that's just for international licensing, for them to air it on, like, BBC3 or I don't know, or ITV, or I don't know, one of those French Canal 7, is that a French channel? Cam?
Sure.
Okay. I know that Sieben is a German station.
Okay.
So there you go.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Very so yeah, if they're already selling those licenses over there, it's going to make money. So right. I think this is a winning business model.
So Andy, I was curious too, just kind of going back to my original question, you know, getting putting the business side away, do you think there is an audience for a new Star Trek series?
I think so. I think so. I think audiences these days are watching a lot more gritty shows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, like, I mean, I don't think there's an audience for Star Trek, like, as it was in TNG.
Right.
Or Deep Space Nine.
20 million people won't be tuning in.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think Star Trek as a universe, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It's not going to be Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek.
Right.
But I think Star Trek as a universe does have an audience.
Cool.
And it has a mainstream audience. It's not just a sci-fi audience.
It has an audience, but are any audiences aware that we have a Star Trek film coming up in just a few short months?
Yeah, that's a good seg, because Star Trek Beyond is allegedly coming out mid-July.
I've heard rumors.
Or late-ish July. I think it's like July 22nd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a movie that is very curious because there was a lot of excitement kind of surrounding its launch. Almost right off the bat when they started shooting, they announced that Chris Pine and Zach Quinto would be back for Star Trek IV. News broke that that Paramount has registered Star Trek IV as a domain name. So, does anyone have opinions on this movie?
Well, here's what we're getting at, listeners. There's almost zero buzz for this film.
Compare the buzz for Star Trek Beyond to the buzz for Suicide Squad, which opens after Star Trek Beyond.
Well, and think about just the whole trailer situation. We've had one trailer that really underwhelmed everybody.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen this trailer in theaters, Cam?
I think maybe once.
I've seen it once.
I have an admission. I haven't seen the trailer at all.
Yeah, and you're a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, and I'm a Star Trek fan.
So this is very concerning.
Yeah.
So allegedly there will be the debut of the second trailer May 20th.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because in Las Vegas every year there's a thing called CinemaCon, which is sort of a big convention aimed at theater owners where studios come and basically put together clips, packages, really hyping their new releases. So it's generally going to focus on the blockbusters. And Paramount came. They had Simon Pegg there handing J.J. Abrams an award for something or other. And they hyped all of Paramount's upcoming movies except for Star Trek Beyond.
That's crazy.
Which is insane. Like, I don't know if people realize, but like CinemaCon, it's not like Comic-Con where some studios sit it out. You know, they got their own things going. Like Disney has their own D23 convention or something like that. CinemaCon is where all of the studios are going to pitch to theater owners to play their movie.
I think the thing is everybody just assumed that there would be something Star Trek related there just because of the players involved, as you mentioned, Cam.
Yeah.
And the fact that we haven't seen anything since that underwhelming trailer came out a few months ago.
Even, you would have even thought they would have just played that same teaser.
Yeah.
They would have.
Or did they not?
No, they did not even mention it by name.
Oh, and I do wonder, I know Simon Pegg was not a fan of that teaser.
Yeah.
Who knows what J.J. Abrams thinks.
But all they would have had to have is even just like a clip of just like Simon Pegg saying, you know, hey, Star Trek Beyond is coming out. They didn't even mention the movie by name.
Yeah.
This is like a $150 million investment in the summer.
But I do wonder if they realized what a folly that was, because for the last few weeks, they've been releasing stills. There's been a lot more interviews from Justin Lin.
Well, they got a lot of bad press for them skipping CinemaCon.
Yeah, but we've been getting a lot more interviews from like the players involved in the last few weeks, and I think they realize they need to get some sort of buzz going for this movie.
Yeah.
Because this movie comes out pretty quickly, and usually by this time, when you have a blockbuster film coming out, there's a lot more publicity being unleashed. And even during the filming of it, Cam, it filmed here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And we figure, oh man, we're just going to hear nothing but like Star Trek news for the next few months.
I heard more about Deadpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we did. Exactly. Did we really hear anything?
One of my coworkers saw Chris Pine in a grocery store.
Yeah.
That was the extent of what I heard.
You have a source that was connected to the film, and so that source fed you some behind the scenes information, but really nothing picked up through mainstream media at all.
No.
It was very strange. I don't know, like, do you guys have any theories about what's going on here? Just the lack of buzz? Like, why is this? I don't think it's because they have a turd on their hands. I don't think it's that.
I don't want to be a doom and Go ahead.
Even if it is a turd, they always market them. You market the movies the same way, I would say.
Well, I don't want to be a doom and gloom guy, but every summer, usually, and throughout the fall too, there will be a blockbuster where there will be no advertising, and usually it winds up being the Fantastic Four or Jonah Hex or movies like that where that happens, where you will not see ads, and everyone's like, "Isn't this movie opening in like a month and a half or something?" And it's usually those types of movies. And I don't want to say that Star Trek Beyond falls into that, because God, do I hope it doesn't.
Yeah.
I want it to be good. I want it to be really fun, because I wasn't a fan of Into Darkness. And I would love to see one that was closer to the 2009 film, or just something that made me excited for more Star Trek movies. But the messages they're sending out, both hiding all this like footage and like keeping it very quiet, but then also really announcing we're making sequels. Like, this is the sort of tactics that a lot of movies in trouble do. This is what happened with Batman v Superman, which ultimately did well, but was lousy.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, they announced dates for Amazing Spider-Man 3 and 4 and a spin-off before Amazing Spider-Man 2 opened. And how did that work out?
Well, but, you know, you could also point to successful movies that have done the same thing as well.
Yeah. It's the combination of the hyping sequels that don't exist, sort of other sequels.
Yeah.
And also not showing anything.
But here's the... Okay, they're not hyping sequels that don't exist. They signed two actors to a sequel, and they registered a domain name. That's very different than the tactics that, say, Batman v Superman colon
that
Dawn
one
of
in
Justice.
Particular, yes, yeah.
Part one.
But I'm thinking more, when I talk about the sequels, I'm thinking actually I should really say more like Green Lantern. They announced the sequel, and then also Fantastic Four.
I think those are maybe just things you can compare it to. I don't know if it's necessarily that. Here's the thing.
I don't want it to be.
No. But, a year ago, I was much more frightened for the future of the franchise when we weren't even certain they'd get a script off the ground in time for the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
But you know what? They hired Simon Pegg.
Mm-hmm.
They hired Justin Lin.
Yeah.
Those are two guys that you and I are both fans of.
Yeah.
So they're at least doing the right things, unless the studio felt it was really necessary for them to get involved.
Right.
Which we did hear a couple stories about how they wanted their own Guardians of the Galaxy franchise.
Right, yeah.
Which made me kind of cringe. But
the
fact of the matter is like Simon Pegg, like he's kind of a sci-fi geek.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched like a horribly written Simon Pegg movie yet?
Hot Fuzz is one of my favorite movies.
I
love that.
No, I can't think of one.
Yeah, like Simon Pegg hasn't done like a horribly written movie.
No,
like,
although I've only seen him do comedy.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He's good with getting like tugging on those emotional heartstrings, you know, even for a movie like Shaun of the Dead. Or even like The End of the World, where like he's playing this alcoholic. We should mention, just for people that don't know, Simon Pegg writes probably half the movies he's appeared in. When he's collaborating with Edgar Wright.
Right,
when he's collaborating with Edgar Wright, he always co-writes those films.
He did not write Run, Fat Boy, Run.
No, that was David Schwimmer all the way, man. No, I kid. David Schwimmer only directed. But I have confidence in Simon Pegg to do some good writing here.
Right.
I have confidence in Justin Lin to direct it very well.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm hopeful for this movie. I'm more hopeful than I am fearful, but this lack of buzz, this lack of publicity just baffles me to no end.
It's weird to me that like Justin Lin, you know, they put on the interview rounds.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm not doing the next one.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Going right out and saying that in the interview runs. And then they announced today he's going to be directing Space Jam 2. This is a man who's turning down Star Trek 4 to make Space Jam 2 with LeBron James.
He's a huge LeBron James fan. That's all I can say.
When I saw it, I was like, oh Lord. Because he was saying that this Star Trek movie to him didn't feel like a very... it wasn't like a personal choice for him to be doing this.
Right.
He said he didn't view it that way. It was kind of... He referred to it as a bit of a rescue mission.
No, well, he was saying similar things like when he decided not to sign on for the next Fast and Furious movie and he did Conjuring 2 instead.
No, that was James Wan.
Oh, James Wan. I'm sorry. But but Justin Lin was saying that there was a reason why he didn't want to do another Fast and Furious movie.
Right.
And so I that to me is not... I'm not nearly as cynical as you are right now.
No, but it's just strange to see a director before the movie comes out be like, I'm not coming back. Usually they kind of dodge those questions until later.
What would you prefer, him to dodge the question or him to just be straightforward? Like, you know, I've already signed for Space Jam 2.
I wouldn't. I would be like, are you kidding, right? I would, you know what? Honestly, I would have preferred if the situation surrounding Star Trek Beyond was better, but when he said that.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like the waterfall of all these things kind of accumulating together.
Yeah, it's not great.
No. But I am also at a kind of a zen point now where because we have the anthology, because sort of there's other outlets of Star Trek coming, I don't feel as dependent on the movie to be successful.
Right.
Like, I love Chris Pine, I love Zach Quinto, I love Zoe Saldana, I love all this cast and these roles, I want to see them continue really badly. But if it all falls apart, I can live with it.
I don't think it would. It doesn't affect the universe of the TV series.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Which
yeah.
you will not be watching.
I'll find a way to watch it. Okay. We'll do it at a party.
You know, like, I'm curious, Andy, like, how did you feel about the last couple Star Treks, the J.J. Abrams ones?
I thought the 2009 was okay. I don't remember if we had this discussion before. I think we did. But after we watched Into Darkness, I came out of the movie and was like, oh yeah, that was great. You know, that was a lot of fun. And then after, you know, thinking about the movie and rewatching it again.
And acting out the kung fu on the garbage truck scene with Benjamin Yong. You're like, wait a minute.
It was that I think we called it the Phantom Menace syndrome.
Right.
Where you come out of the movie super excited, and then after you're actually thinking about it, you're like, what did I just watch?
Yeah. Are you comparing Khan versus Spock to Duel of Fates? Duel of Fates is awesome.
I would argue, I think, that I would compare Into Darkness more like maybe Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Okay.
Or maybe a Prometheus.
So, Khan versus Spock is more akin to Mutt swinging from the vines in the jungle, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Hey, I'm complimenting Duel of Fates here.
You know, I think maybe Prometheus for me is the better, because I think Prometheus has good stuff. I think Into Darkness has good stuff in it. It just doesn't hold together at all for me.
Right. Okay. Well, okay, what do we need to see in the near future to get us a little bit more confident about Star Trek Beyond?
I think a trailer that sells the movie.
Yeah.
Because the teaser did not sell the movie.
But neither did the teaser for 2009.
No, it didn't. But they followed that up with a trailer that was really badass pretty quickly.
Well, how quickly was it, though? Do you
probably
remember?
About a month. A month and a half. They released the teaser far earlier than the teaser for Beyond. Like the between the release of Star Trek 2009 and the teaser was a far greater distance than the teaser for Beyond leading up to release.
Because I believe the original plan was to have the 2009 movie out in time for Christmas 2008.
Yes.
That got moved back. And I think it was actually because Paramount was so happy with the film.
Yes.
But I remember that original teaser is really just a shot of people doing construction work on the Enterprise.
I love that teaser.
I thought that was so boring.
You put it down so many times, and I was such a big fan of that teaser.
I fell asleep.
Was it a teaser, not a full trailer?
Yeah.
I think that the trend is just reveal a little bit, like a little bit fan service stuff, and that's all you gotta do.
It didn't get me excited. And then the follow up teaser that actually had footage, mm-hmm. I was still like, okay.
Yeah.
But the full on trailer that they debuted a few months after that, I was like, wow, I'm there, like opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at all like? Here's the thing. I think that Star Trek Into Darkness had the potential to have a great trailer.
Yes.
It
never had one.
It never had one, though, either. I'm just wondering, who is the publicity department? Who are the guys in charge of marketing at Paramount right now? Because they're doing a really crappy job.
They must be learning from the people at Fox who advertise the X-Men movies.
Yeah, that's true. Should we segue into a conversation about, like, why is there no buzz about X-Men Apocalypse?
Yeah, no kidding. You know? At least there's trailers for it, though.
That's true.
There's lots of trailers.
I just wish, okay, for me to get excited, I wouldn't mind seeing, like, at least a cool-looking poster. Mm-hmm. The posters that I've seen so far look like somebody made it in Photoshop over a weekend. We need to have another badass trailer.
Another one? All right.
their first badass trailer.
Yeah, yeah. They need to sell what the story is.
Yeah, I have no idea what this movie's about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think from watching the first two movies, the reason I'm not like, super excited about J.J. Abrams' Star Trek is it just seems like it's going to be another shooting spaceships in space movie.
Which is what that teaser sold.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought very much the same about 2009.
Yeah.
And that movie had its problems. Mostly, there wasn't a real theme to it. But by golly, they made a one heck of a swashbuckling flick, you know, to get behind.
Adventure movie.
It was. Absolutely. It was sci-fi, generic sci-fi adventure movie, but it was dang good. And that was our complaint about this latest teaser that came out a few months ago, Cam. It's like, this teaser just looked like generic sci-fi action movie.
And that's, I can't get excited about generic sci-fi action movies.
Even if they have the Beastie Boys rocking out throughout
even
the entire...
Even if they have the Beastie Boys
rocking out.
And the thing is, you have things like Star Wars and the Marvel movies doing sort of kind of superficially fun adventure movies far better than what
and
Star Trek
Guardians
has
of the
done.
Galaxy, I thought what the greatest, best part of that movie was the writing, the dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's I don't see that happening in the Star Trek.
Well, okay, here's the thing. For that example, you had James Gunn. He was writer and director for Guardians. What if we get, like, Edgar Wright to come in on the next movie? He's going to collaborate with Simon Pegg. I could see Star Trek IV having that fun sort of
Galaxy
dialogue.
Galaxy Quest.
Well, I mean, sure, yeah. I don't know if Edgar Wright's going to go near a major studio property after the Ant-Man debacle.
Well, yeah, good point, but I don't know. I'm sure Simon Pegg could convince him, you know.
It's tough to say. When you're getting to a fourth entry in a series, it's sometimes hard to pull big names.
But don't you think Edgar Wright would be like, oh, you know what? There's been 14 of these movies. I might as well. It'd be like, you'd probably say yes to like a James Bond movie if, you know, he had the opportunity. I think if a director gets the opportunity to touch that Star Trek franchise, and he's getting a big budget.
Yeah.
And I think Edgar Wright is the kind of guy who would be willing to do it.
Edgar Wright strikes me more as a guy who would go for a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Which he could get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm intrigued by the prospect. I like how I'm more excited about a potential Star Trek 4 movie than I am about Star Trek Beyond. Which is telling you, like, what a failure the marketing team at Paramount is at this point. If you can't even get hardcore Star Trek fans excited about the prospect of seeing these guys up on screen for the first time in 3 years.
You have guys who talk about Star Trek weekly on a podcast.
And they don't care about this movie.
Yeah, they're willing to just kind of say, well, at least we got the anthology series.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, we brought it up before. We're far more excited about an anthology series that's going to debut a year from now than we are about a movie that's going to debut in 3 months.
Which isn't right, like, because I love this cast. And yeah. I love... You know, I'm kind of iffy on, especially Into Darkness, and I think they've kind of fallen short of what they could have achieved. Like, I really think, you know, jumping off of 2009, the sky was the limit in terms of what they could do. Like, you know, now they're like, we want our Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like, they could have really been a trendsetter as opposed to a follower post-2009. Like, they could have just done something really creative and fun, and they didn't. I think this is that chance to do it, and I think this is their crucial chance to do it. If they don't, I think they could be in trouble.
As a franchise?
Yeah. I don't think... Like if they don't establish what the Star Trek movies are with this one...
You're waiting another 10 years?
Yeah, I don't know that they're limping to make a fourth one. Well, like, we're just kind of trying to break even with these.
I disagree. Here's why. You look at how much money the last two have made when they're pumping it full of huge dollars for the budgets... There, and Cam, you've got this look on your face that I want to smack off you right now. And I keep repeating this. It's international audiences. They're going to be guaranteed to go see a movie, a generic sci-fi action movie.
But if you look at the dollars for Star Trek summer movies, these last two, versus other blockbusters, they're actually on the lower end. They're successful, but they're lower end. They're not like...
Which is a lot better than what the Star Trek franchises were doing 10 years prior.
Yes, but it's not what they want.
It's not what they want, but Cam, they're not going to say, you know what, we're only getting $600 million,
right.
You know, let's stop making these very successful movies. So that's why I do disagree with
you. And Paramount does have sort of not a lot on their slate to kind of milk as a franchise.
Paramount's in a lot of trouble right now.
But they are launching their Hasbro universe.
Can't wait.
So that's something.
That is something.
Hot Wheels or something?
I think
it's a G.I. Joe mask, ROM Space Knight, Voltron, I think. It's a whole. They're all going to team up in movies.
I can't wait.
But that shows that they're willing to throw their money at other things.
Well, we've kind of brought it up before, but there's no real shepherd for the film franchise right now. There's nobody at Paramount that really knows what to do with this, so there's no guidance that anyone's really getting. All they got are, I'm guessing, notes from the executives saying, make it more like Guardians of the Galaxy, because that movie made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, guys, instead of trying to copy a successful model, do something thrilling, something, be the next Guardians of the Galaxy in that there's no other movie like it before.
Right.
They're not doing that. So any other thoughts about Star Trek Beyond before we move on to maybe, I think, a discussion about fan films?
Well, I'm curious, just Andy, are you going to be running out to see Star Trek Beyond opening weekend?
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know.
That's because you didn't even know
I didn't even know it was coming out in this summer. I knew it was like around, kind of in the ether, but
he would rather go see a Fast and Furious movie than Star Trek Beyond.
Oh, actually, I didn't, and this, I'm kind of like out of the opening weekend thing. I didn't even I didn't even go to the Star Wars opening weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's just, you know, the things change after you know, get older. Like, you know, I was in high school. I told you. Totally.
You and Cam are the same age.
I mean, I think it's really sad that I'm way more excited for Suicide Squad than Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
Because I can care less about the DC universe.
No, I think I will see it in the theater, which is like a lot more than I would say about you know, other movies.
Right.
Yeah.
The second run theater.
Yeah, or just wait till they're on Netflix. You know? Yeah,
there you go. I mean, obviously, we're gonna see it debut weekends because we have to podcast about it.
Yeah, we'll have our review episode. Right. Yes. Yeah,
yeah. So, but other than, I mean, I still would see it opening weekend, but I don't know. They're not sending the best signals to me right now.
I mean, they can turn it around. There's still a bit of time.
Oh yeah,
but that's not gonna change the content of the movie, though.
No, that's true.
It's gonna be either. It's still going to be a good or bad movie.
Is this how you market a great film, though?
No.
Yeah, that's why it's a little concerning.
Never. And, they're doing this big event we should mention on May 20th, the Star Trek Day, where they're going to drop a new trailer. Justin Lin is going to be doing some sort of webcast or something like that. And we will do an episode talking about that trailer.
On the set of Space Jam 2.
That would be amazing.
Live from Space Jam 2.
It would be amazing if he used the May 20th Star Trek date just to talk about Space Jam.
All you see in the background is LeBron James's legs.
That would be incredible. But I mean, so we will be doing an episode about that, and I hope we're a lot cheerier after that event.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I hope so too.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows? Maybe May 20th will turn it around. But the fact that they're waiting until just 2 months before the movie's release date to get people to notice the movie exists, that's really weird.
Yeah.
And that's the underlying word, is weird.
Especially considering how desperate Paramount is to launch a real giant franchise. Yeah. And right now, Star Trek, I would call it like on the high end of a mid-sized franchise or the low end of a big franchise right now. So, well, we'll see. Cam, fan films.
Right.
What's the current state of fan filmdom?
Not good, Tyler.
I watched a whole bunch of them for a recent podcast. You're right.
Yes. Now, we've talked about fan films in the past. And Andy, have you ever watched Star Trek fan films?
I think I've watched part of a Star Trek fan film once.
Your eyes started burning. You had to turn it off.
Through your computer screen, through the window.
I think it might have been the Tim Russ one.
Okay, yeah. Of Gods and Men?
Yeah. Or Renegades.
Renegades. Ah. I think I watched like part of an episode of
The Fire Planet wasn't enough to keep you watching. Yeah. And then, racist Fire Planet.
The other thing that I've watched was that Brent Spiner. It's not a Star Trek fan film, but the Brent Spiner one where he's about him like failing in his career after
phenomenon related. He's like, how did he move the pencil?
It's like Fall to Hell or something. I forget the name.
Oh, I've heard. I've heard
that.
That's
the last kind of Star Trek related thing that I've seen.
Yeah, but Cam, there are lawsuits going on right now. Essentially, CBS, Paramount, they're shutting these bad boys down.
Yeah, they went after Star Trek Axanar, which was like the big one that had raised $1.2 million, had a professional crew, professional cast, despite being a fan film.
Yeah.
And did they give permission or something like that?
They claim there was like some sort of handshake deal with CBS. Yeah.
But the weird thing is, doing some research a little more into this for this episode, is that there was always kind of this weird line, like CBS and Paramount really did allow these fan films to flourish. Because I think at that point, they didn't really have any content of their own to keep Star Trek alive.
Yeah.
So they just let all these fan filmmakers kind of go nuts, put out all their own fan films because, they're winding up on social media. The name Star Trek is out there. It's keeping them alive.
And I think they should have actually taken a more progressive view about that. It's building buzz. It's making the pie bigger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these traditional media companies just come down hard on, like, ownership of IP rights.
Yeah, but I which is understandable because I think the big difference here is, as Cam mentioned, these are professional crews. They're made to look professional, and the big concern with Paramount/CBS is that it's diluting the brand of people. I like the fact that like Axanar and Renegades is getting a lot more mainstream attention than Star Trek Beyond is right now.
Yeah.
But the fact is, if people are confusing brands because they look so well done, they don't look like, you know, ships being held together on strings or anything like that. So
yeah.
I can understand why the studios pursued the lawsuits. I feel bad for a lot of these fans.
Because they shut down another one too, is Star Trek Federation Rising. And, I mean, the interesting thing is, like, there'd always been this weird kind of relationship between the official and the unofficial filmmakers. Like, they'd had cameos for fan filmmakers in the 2009 movie. The fan films had lent sets to the official crew for, like, Enterprise. In an episode of Enterprise, they named a ship the Ticonderoga. I don't know how to pronounce that.
You don't know how to pronounce that?
Yeah. As reference to a fan film's hometown. Like, so it's like they're definitely, we're kind of encouraging these people, which feels kind of cruel to really be like, you're kind of part of the gang. We love what you're doing. Keep doing it. Can we borrow your sets? Awesome. You're the best. Here's a shout out. Stop it or we'll sue you.
Yeah. It's really pulling the rug out from underneath them.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I agree with you on how it's diluting the brand. Because
get out of here.
Because I don't think Star Trek doesn't have a consistent brand.
True.
Your movie universe is totally different than your TV universe.
Yeah.
On the face of it, and then also like in terms of style, and they're totally different. So I think there is already kind of different. There are different Star Treks. All around. And
yeah.
Could just be another licensed universe, and it's like non-canon, or it could be.
But I think maybe the studios, maybe diluting the brand isn't exactly what I meant, but like kind of more of the confusion. Like if some mainstream audience sees like this crappy fan film and they're like, yeah, that's the reason why I don't watch Star Trek. If they see these trailers that look like garbage, they're like, yeah, I'm not going to watch Star Trek. I think maybe that's what CBS...
There's a lot of very uneducated people searching YouTube for trailers.
I'm shocked to
hear
that.
Because so often I'll see people complain about a movie trailer, but they've watched a fan film trailer.
Yes.
I've seen it happen time and time and time again.
Or like one of those like fan film cuts.
They'll
recut a trailer into making it something good. Or they'll recut an old movie and make a trailer out of it. And then think that's the official trailer.
Well, they even did that with Star Trek Beyond. They made like a better trailer out of that first teaser that we got.
Right.
I've seen three different fan cuts. They're all okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe better than the sabotage-laden... Beyond teaser, but none of them really blew me out of the water, I'd have to say.
So what do you think is the future of fan films? Because fan films, I mean, we go to the cons, a lot of people love these fan films, and a lot of fans are working on them. Like, I was reading in the story I read, which was on Newsweek, and it's called Star Trek Copyright Lawsuit Pits Paramount and CBS Against Professional Fan Film. Very long title, but that's the name of the article if you want to search it out. They talked to Vic, the filmmaker who makes Star Trek Continues. And which I think is one of the best of the fan films.
We both agreed that that was, I thought that was the best one.
Yeah, and he said he's having a lot of trouble just getting money to make the next one because people don't want to donate. Because they don't think...
It's a big risk.
Because they just think it's going to get shut down.
Yeah, it's... So, what's the future of fan films? The other interesting thing is that, look, if it falls under, like, parody or fair use, you can still... They don't have a leg to stand on if they're trying to shut you down in the courts.
Yeah.
So I think maybe a lot of more proliferation of Star Trek porn movies. Why are you guys laughing?
Possibly. I mean, yeah, definitely parodies. The filmmakers who are doing The Federation Rising said they're instead going to make an original sci-fi movie, which I think is encouraging.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I love the idea that they're going to take kind of this general storyline they had for Federation Rising and make an original sci-fi film. I think that's great.
Yeah, I think you can explore a lot of things if you're an independent filmmaker that you don't have to worry. You're not doing it for your big, you know, mainstream acceptance. You can explore ideas that may not be popular to a mainstream audience. You can take more risks. Do different things that that wouldn't be, that don't dilute the kind of the Star Trek-ness of the brand.
Yeah, and here's why it's particularly tough, I think, at this moment of time. 20 years ago, how prolific were these fan films, really?
Yeah, well, I feel like they were something that was kind of handed around at fan conventions and stuff like that.
I brought it up on, I think, the fan film podcast that we did, Cam, but right now we now have distribution models such as YouTube that allows them to be spread over the internet instantaneously to huge audiences. We also have at a point of technology where you can, you know, rent a digital camera that looks like an actual film camera.
You can use an iPhone.
Yeah. You can also do special effects on like your home computer.
Yeah.
You know, so you can make them look way better and you can get them distributed to audiences more than before. That's why people are so excited about doing this compared with 20 years ago, or like, let's be honest, they would have looked like garbage compared with what was going on television week to week at that time.
Oh, for sure.
So I do feel bad for fans. I totally think, like, legally speaking, Paramount, CBS, it's their case to lose. I don't know how they lose these cases, which is unfortunate for fans. I feel for them. But, guys, I don't know if you have any sort of argument at this point. It's not your property. And I know people would argue, oh, well, Paramount, CBS, they never cared about the property in the first place. We took ownership of it. I'm just like... Guys,
it doesn't work that way.
They own it. They literally own it.
How much do you think has to do with the fact they just don't want fans out there making movies or TV series on stories that they're planning to possibly do in their anthologies? Like, they just don't want people making stories in their universe because they might be doing that.
Like I said before, I don't think the studios are providing any sort of guidance, you know, to the actual creative people. So on the movie side, that's Justin Lin, Simon Pegg.
Mm-hmm.
On the TV side, that's Brian Fuller, Alex Kurtzman. I don't think that's their number one concern. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't even know about this anthology pitch until very recently. Although I'm sure they would have known that when Brian Fuller was talking to them last year.
Right.
So who knows? It's tough to say, in mm-hmm. fact.
So is there, like, do you think that there will be fan films? Do you think... You know, because Star Trek Renegades came out, Star Trek of Gods and Men. Will there be another one of those in the future?
I say not the way that we've been seeing them recently, where they're going through crowdfunding.
Yeah.
They're getting these super high budgets with a lot of Star Trek cast members coming in.
What is Gary Graham going to do?
He's going to star in the... Vulcan anthology series that Andy pitched to us last week.
Okay. Andy's directing himself, actually, isn't
it? Fantastic.
Do you want to announce that now?
Shh, it's a secret. I gotta stay under the radar so I don't get sued.
You can beat Justin Lin to the May 20th thing. Like, announce yours today.
Yeah. I think it's a tough road ahead for fan films. I really don't see them in the future the way that they've been so prolific in just the past 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see Star Trek continue to move forward, though. Because I think he's got a good thing going there.
Sure.
You know, some of them I just don't care.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we've watched a lot that were pretty bad.
Yes.
But, you know, that one I think he's at least doing something fun that I would like to see continue, but I don't know if it will. It's weird they haven't targeted him, actually, yet, because I would say he's among the most well-known.
I do wonder why that is. Maybe he should be offended.
Yeah.
They don't think mine look professional enough.
Yeah, I don't know, because they went after Federation Rising, and I've never even heard of that.
Yeah.
So.
What about that Captain Pike series that they're trying to pitch us on the podcast?
Oh, should we talk about that now?
Sure, might as well.
Okay, so, yeah, we got an email a while back, actually, from the producer of a Captain Pike, web series?
Yes, I think so.
And they wanted to be on the podcast. And they gave us a hard deadline as to when they had to be on by. And it corresponded with their crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. So and the creator's rent was due that day as well.
So, yeah, we had to pass on that.
We had to.
Had to.
For your sake, we had to.
We had to.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting because we did get a couple messages from, and you know what? Hey, I guess props to them for just trying to get their funds to make them, but I don't think we'll be getting any of those emails now.
Yeah.
Probably not. So was there anything else we wanted to mention just about 50th anniversary, current state of Trek, anything else that's jumping out?
Well, what was that thing that we saw? Does anybody know what the thing is that we saw at the end of Star Trek 2 or the beginning?
I'm still confused about that.
Was it called the film event or the fan? I think it was called the fan event.
The fan event.
Yeah, what was that?
I suspect maybe it's just some officially licensed Paramount/CBS conventions that are going on. I know there's one going on in New York. It seems a little late in the game to start announcing some more in the fall, so I don't know, really.
I think it's going to be they're going to show the movies at that theater chain. That's what I think it was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'd love to see Star Trek 6 in the theater. I missed that.
Yeah, I would like to see 6 and 1. 1 I'm dying to see on the big screen.
I was thinking about it. The first one I ever saw in theaters was 7, so I've seen from Generations on all in theaters. Since then, I've seen 2...
4, 5. Yeah.
But I need to see 1, 3, and 6 in theaters still. So. Right.
And 2 of those are pretty visually dynamic.
Well, I guess my last thing that I want to bring up is I'm looking forward to even just the new licensing and memorabilia opportunities we'll be getting throughout this 50th anniversary and what the new toys for Star Trek Beyond and Star Trek the Anthology series will look like too.
I want some more Star Trek ties. That aren't that old style of tie.
Yeah,
skinny tie.
Yeah. When you look up Star Trek ties, they're all like your dad's ties. Yeah. You know, the big like wide ones. So I'm not buying that. Even though like they had like one with all like the Deep Space Nine aliens on it.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. But I'm not wearing.
What about something more subtle, like a tie that kind of like hinted at the uniform style, but not having like the logo made, all over it.
They made some like that actually. The TNG ones.
Oh, I like the TNG socks.
Okay, day. Yeah, the ties were like the socks.
Yeah, those are cool.
Same sort of idea. And so, then the underwear.
Yeah.
You got the underwear one.
Of course. I'm wearing it right now.
Well, it was weird that he had to ask the vendor if he could try them on right then and there at the booth. It's like the vendor reluctantly agreed.
What?
So, just kind of going
on around. That note.
So, just kind of going around. So, we kind of did this at the end of the 2015, 2016. Are you optimistic about the future of Star Trek? Why don't we start with Tyler?
I'm optimistic, yes, especially the Anthology series. I'm looking forward to the convention in Vegas we're going to. I'm a glass half full kind of guy, so I'm going to keep hoping that Star Trek Beyond turns out to be a well-done film. Mm. To me, there's nothing about it, like, visually, based on that one teaser, it looks like an absolute like piece of flaming turd.
No, it doesn't look bad.
So I still hold out hope that it ends up being an okay film. Just based on the few tidbits that have leaked out, I'm intrigued by what the story is about.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And I'm really excited about the Anthology. And
yeah, excited that you're not willing to pay for it.
Well, you know, we've got to talk about it first.
Sure.
Actually, you know what? I'm excited about being able to talk about the Anthology.
Ah,
That's where you know if watching the show is the homework,
right?
For actually talking about it.
It's been more than a decade since I've seen Star Trek week to week. Like, that's crazy to think.
Yeah,
the newest episode of TNG is older than 20 years old.
Yeah, 94. And we're coming up to the 22nd anniversary of the last episode. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing the Star Trek 25th anniversary point-and-click game.
Oh, okay.
On the computer, so
I love that game.
That makes me think, oh my god, a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, no kidding. So yeah, I'm fairly optimistic. I like to consider myself sort of an optimistic pessimist. I always kind of expect the worst, but I hope for the best all the time.
Well, that's funny. We're opposites. I'm the pessimistic optimist.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, I mean, I hope for the best for all these things. Yeah. I'm nervous about Beyond. Even if the movie comes out awesome, I'm worried about just like if they've shot themselves in a foot purely from a marketing standpoint and getting an audience into this movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if the movie doesn't perform and it has Suicide Squad, I think, opening a week later. That could,
or is it 2 weeks later?
Maybe it's 2 weeks, but I don't know if there's something opening a week later. Like, it is a crowded summer.
Yeah.
So it's like just the worry of like they got to kind of hit big before their money could get their business could kind of get robbed, and they're not doing themselves any favors by keeping the movie quiet.
I'm still confident that international audiences will spend a lot of money and at least guarantee the green light for Star Trek IV.
Let's just hope there's no bizarro, like, Batman v Superman thing where, like, all its screens got yanked in China, like, a week later.
Oh, really?
To make room for, I think, Jungle Book.
Oh, okay.
It was something like, I don't know if it was Jungle Book. It was might have been something else.
Well, but Jungle Book is a far superior film.
It is, it is. Yeah. I don't think it was Jungle Book, but it was like all the screens were promised to something else. So it yanked it out a week later or whatever.
Isn't there a big, I don't know, Chinese movie about a turnip monster that's like...
There was a movie called Mermaid, okay. Mermaids, that did really well. I think huge amount of money.
Turnip monster movie in China that, like, oh, really? A fantasy kind of movie that did really well in, like, the past 6 months.
Was this your fan film?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope nothing like that happens to Beyond, because that would really...
Yeah, turnip aliens, really, yeah, not a fan either.
They could deal with a Mugatu, but not a turnip alien.
Yeah, or mermaids.
Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com.
Well, guys, be sure to tune in next week. We're going to be tackling, I think, one of my favorite topics.
Season 2 of TNG.
Yeah. No, we're going to be talking about exactly what went wrong with those first two seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation. Bill Shatner, he put out an interesting documentary a few months back, Chaos on the Bridge, just dissecting all the various problems that those first two seasons had. We're going to go back and review a couple of those really concerning episodes from early on in the series and just discuss what were the issues facing Star Trek at the time. Why are people big fans of the early seasons of Next Gen, Cam?
Maybe talk about some good ones too.
Are there good ones?
There are a couple. Okay. I think that are worth
conspiracy.
Some good ones. Yeah, yeah. I'll give it that.
So, yeah, so that should be really interesting. So you can also leave a review for us on our iTunes page. That will help us get wealth, in which case we can buy you all. Thank you very much. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V is in very, very excited for Space Jam 2 Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, and is in new Star Trek underwear for Cam Smith.
And Andy.
I'm at Sockbot, S-O-C-K-B-O-T.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.